wake, and engine instruments are dependable reference.
Which first officer and captain peer out into the distance to find the smooth, clear way ahead.
August 31st, 1988. An airplane sits motionless at the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport as passengers begin to slowly take their seats. 78 people in total were scheduled to fly that day, with the craft being piloted by Captain Larry Davis, First Officer Kerry Kirkland, and Flight Engineer Stephen Judd, a crew that boasted an impressive 30,000 hours of flight time amongst them. It was a notably windy day for the flight bound for Salt Lake City, Utah, so much so that by the time they had pulled away from the gate and reached the runway, a call was sent down to the cockpit directing them to hold their position for an additional minute, as the gusts now swelled more and more ferociously. The hold again left the craft stationary, allowing for a few moments in which the crew members spoke amongst themselves.
"We forgot something on our first leg today. We forgot to discuss about the dating habits of our flight attendants so we can get it on the recorder, you know, in case we crash, then the media would have some kind of a juicy
The voice you're hearing is that of First Officer Kerry Kirkland, who mentions a point that, in passing, seems completely out of the blue, that they should talk about the dating habits of their flight attendants, as it would give the media something to talk about in the event that they crashed. As bizarre as this line sounds, Kerry was actually referencing a separate incident that had happened not even a year before, with that being the crash of Flight 1713.
"A few seconds of indescribable terror on runway 35 left. Too many people die in an instant. We ask again, why them and not us?"
In that scenario, the pilots of the flight had also been awaiting takeoff, this time in the midst of a brutal blizzard. And rather than discussing their takeoff, they instead had conversations about the stewardesses on board, joking and laughing amongst themselves about the manner in which they dated around, with these pilots getting so lost in that conversation that they completely forgot to de-ice their plane. A mistake they likely never even realized, as just moments after takeoff, rather than the plane soaring high above the ground, it raised only slightly before falling limp, crashing into the dirt below it and killing 28 people on board, including those two pilots. The story made national and international headlines, making it a topical reference for Kerry to bring up, yet also a clearly inappropriate one, as he had failed to notice the irony in his words. Following the crash of 1713, new, stricter guidelines were put in place so that pilots would keep their conversation focused on the takeoff process until they were well established in the air. Yet here, Kerry was joking around with the crew, not even noticing that he too was creating a distraction. One that sucked in not only one of their flight attendants, but even the captain himself.
"We were just talking yesterday, you know, about 191 seems to be the classic airline crash that the news media goes for every time."
Which led to Kerry providing one last bit of gallows humor.
"Yeah, you know that Continental that crashed in Denver? Did you read that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, they were talking about dating habits of one of the flight attendants. Had a real nice, you know, laugh, you know. We got to leave something for our wife and children to listen to."
He was well aware of just how much the media loved a good plane crash segment, and unbeknownst to that distracted crew within the cockpit, they were about to give them a fresh story.
"Power set. Engine estimates look good. Airspeed's coming up both sides. VR, V2.
Whoa. Engine failure.
That's all the airtime the craft could muster, as immediately upon the wheels lifting off the ground, the craft began to roll right, with the wing striking the runway and catching on fire as it clipped a nearby antenna that was anchored to the ground. The plane was immediately uncontrollable and completely unable to gain any sort of significant altitude, as it fell into a pathetic descent and crashed into the dirt below it, sliding well over 1,000 feet before grinding to a halt. In the carnage, 14 people would lose their lives, including two of the flight attendants, while, miraculously, all others survived, including everyone heard on this fateful recording, all of whom were swiftly fired, though not criminally convicted, despite the fact that the crash was deemed to have been caused by their own human error. What the crew had failed to realize was that, as they joked about the pilots of Flight 1713 and their untimely distraction, they too had distracted themselves to the point of forgetting an integral step of the takeoff process. They had failed to lower their wing flaps and slats for takeoff. And without these in proper position, the flight never stood a chance, making the final words inside that cockpit some of the most chillingly ironic ever recorded, with this audio going on to become yet another disturbing oddity found within the dark corners of the internet. Before we get into our next case, I want to first thank today's sponsor, Aura. We live in a time when literally everything can be found online. We have a world of information right there at our fingertips, and sadly, that information typically includes our own personal details. Details that you likely don't even know are being shared. Yet, there they are. And if you don't believe me, just try Googling your name. And the chances are, you'll probably find more information than you would ever want to be out there. And this is true even for myself. And the constant awareness of knowing just how accessible my private information was is something that always made me uneasy, which is why I am so grateful for Aura. Aura identifies the data brokers who are out there selling my private information and automatically submits opt-out requests on my behalf. And the number of these data brokers that they identified for me was honestly staggering, which is a testament to just how good Aura services are. You want to be in control of your information. And stopping data brokers is a great step into doing that, but you also have to protect yourself from companies who may be careless with your information. Now, I don't know if you guys saw this, but recently AT&T revealed that over 73 million of their customer records from both current and former customers were released onto the dark web. Now, for those affected, they recommended using strong passwords, monitoring your account activity, and consider credit freezes or fraud alerts from credit bureaus. Well, Aura does all this for me. And the best part is, I don't have to download several different apps just because one company couldn't keep my data safe. So if my information had been compromised in that leak, I wouldn't even have to worry, because Aura is always on, and they're always doing the hard work to keep me safe online. I value my privacy, and I value yours as well, so go on over to aura.com/Nick Crowley to try it out on a free 2-week trial, and that link is going to be right down below in the description as well.
JJ didn't know how much time had passed when he first noticed the soundless haze that had moved in all around him. JJ could no longer see the stars or the moon.
The world of flying is often a scary and complex one, and our first case shows just how important it is for pilots to properly check their crafts before taking off. Something that, even as a pilot in training, 18-year-old Connor Quisenberry understood all too well. A well-studied student of the ATP Flight School, Connor had made it his life's mission to become a pilot, completing a multitude of classes and courses at the school. And by the age of 18, only a few steps stood in the way of him obtaining his private pilot's license, the most daunting of which being the high number of flight hours needed. And so, on September 27th, 2023, Connor was scheduled for a nighttime flight with ATP instructor Timothy McKellar, in which he would pilot a small prop plane on a 3-hour-long journey, thus bringing him 3 hours closer to that coveted license. McKellar was just 22, a young man himself, and he had not been Timothy's usual instructor, but that day he was the only pilot available to assist Connor. In fact, it was the first time the two had ever even flown together, and it was clear from the get-go that it was probably going to be their last. Recognizing the importance of checking over your plane before takeoff, Connor had begun performing a lengthy check of the craft to ensure that everything was in working order, exactly what most instructors would probably want to see from their students. But apparently, not McKellar. As unbeknownst to Connor, his flight instructor had pulled out his cell phone during his checks and recorded the following video for his Snapchat. The post was scathing, and despite the student pilot not doing anything out of the ordinary, McKellar seemed displeased at the speed at which Connor was operating, telling his friends on Snapchat how glad he was that Connor wasn't his full-time student, and that he'd seen faster movement at the Special Olympics. It was clear that McKellar wanted no part of this flight, and that the two could be in for a long, tense evening, with McKellar's passive-aggressive attitude only continuing on from here.
Thank you.
The caption here sheds more light on why McKellar seemed so frustrated. As he typed, "I don't have to be up at 4:30 a.m. tomorrow or nothing. Let's take our sweet-ass time and have a conversation instead of getting this 3-hour flight done." But that frustration obviously can't excuse his comments or his demeanor. As in this scenario, he was the teacher, there to support and mentor Connor. Yet instead, he was lambasting him behind his back on social media, and making it apparent to the young student that he was being a burden, as he tapped his fingers obnoxiously on the plane. And these posts continued from here, as the next Snapchat shows that the two had finally made it inside the craft and had now taken off. Now obviously there's a lot of context missing here. It could have been possible that Connor had said something that irked McKellar, or that he was just not being responsive to any advice given. But this seems to be immediately disproven by yet another Snapchat that McKellar posted. 1.6 hours into the flight of me giving it to him straight up. "Forrest, I don't mind you being hard on me, I know I need it." Me thinking to myself, did you really think I cared if you minded? But what I actually said is that we're flying planes, not driving cars. We can't have these weak areas this far in the game. The caption seemed to confirm that Connor was clearly trying to learn and get better, since after all, he was just a student and only 18 years old. But this didn't matter to McKellar. And unfortunately for Connor, this nightmare of a flight was about to get much, much worse. "Headed our way like a group of pissed off hornets," McKellar posted, accompanied by a screenshot of a weather radar, showing heavy rainstorms in the direction in which they were headed. This was the final post ever made to McKellar's Snapchat, as moments later, the small craft would lose contact with flight control and disappear into the stormy night sky. It wouldn't take long for the plane to be found, or at least what was left of it, as using the final posting from Timothy's Snapchat story, a search team was able to track the craft down to a wooded area behind a church, with the flight having ended in a terrible crash due to the turbulence from that storm. And inside that mangled mess of steel were the bodies of Connor Quisenberry and Timothy McKellar, neither of whom survived the impact. With Connor's final night on this earth having been spent facing intense ridicule both in real life and on social media, making these Snapchats some of the more depressing content out there on the internet.
Do not add ed at the end of irregular verbs when making them in the past tense. That's only for regular verbs.
This is Luke Rockwell, or as some of you may know him as Teacher Luke. Raised in Melbourne, Florida, the now 29-year-old was introduced to a wide online audience around the time that TikTok began exploding in popularity in the United States. The premise of his account seemed simple enough from afar. Luke was an excellent speaker and used his understanding of the English language to create short-form videos centered around proper pronunciation and phrasing.
Do not say, "explain me" or "explain you." Instead, you should add the word to. For example, "I'm going to explain to you."
Teacher Luke's account had immediately become an asset for foreign speakers to better understand the language. Though this wasn't all the account consisted of, as he'd also post a variety of other mildly interesting travel-related videos.
Top countries that are the most dangerous to travel to in the year 2022.
And at some, he even took a go at making some more comedic-based content.
"I didn't realize until I came to Thailand that I hate Thais. I'm just gonna say it. The weather is just too hot, man, to wear them around your neck."
But none of these were the reason that the account grew to the size it did, as initially his page was followed by nearly 3 million TikTok users, thanks mainly to his more edgy content, leading to some clips that I'm certain some of you have seen before.
"How do you say this word? Today I'm going to teach you 3 different ways to say this word. Some have a hard R and some do not. Negro is the common word used to call black people in Thailand. When I first moved here, I was shocked to hear it because in Western culture, it's a pretty offensive word."
It's hard to label this content that thrust Luke's page into the spotlight, but I guess it could be described as baiting his audience into thinking he's saying something problematic, but instead making it a loosely educational moment, thus vindicating himself from anything he said. Like I mentioned before, these videos were definitely edgy, so much so that in 2020, his page was actually terminated by TikTok, thus leaving him all the way back at square one. Undeterred though, he kept on creating, launching a new account under the username English with Teacher Luke. And within only 1 year, it had already gained over 1 million followers back.
1 million followers on this account. Thank you guys so much. It's so crazy that 1 year ago on my old account, I hit 1 million on the same day.
His content was seemingly inevitable, with each video being primed for virality. But what many might not have known was that his passion for the English language, as unserious as it may seem from these videos, reached far deeper than just the online world. In 2019, Luke packed his bags and moved all the way across the world to Thailand, where he would use his love of the language to get a job as an English teacher, working with students from K-12 while simultaneously having a flourishing career on TikTok. All factions of his life were thriving, and for a moment, it seemed everything in his world was going right. How could he ever fail? US teacher and TikTok star accused in Thailand of having sex with a teenager. Luke Rockwell was released on bail after he was charged in Bangkok with luring a minor for indecent purpose. With one article, one headline, the facade of English teacher Luke had crumbled. But how did it all go so wrong, and what exactly happened that led to his arrest? Well, it started shortly before the news broke, when a 16-year-old living in Bangkok visited her doctor's office, complaining of intense stomach pain and discomfort. After administering a series of tests, doctors would determine that the girl had contracted not just one, but two STDs, with her only partner having been Luke Rockwell. Her mother was furious upon the revelation and immediately took her to the police, where a full investigation was done, revealing some truly damning information. It was discovered that before the pair had met up for the first time, they had been messaging back and forth for roughly 5 months, and during this time, Luke lured her and eventually convinced her to sleep with him. And while this is horrible enough, some agencies actually reported that the girl was a former student, and had become a fan of his content, which led her to reconnect with her former teacher, insinuating that the grooming may have stemmed back even further than just those 5 months. But I need to note that I was unable to find any solid proof of this, so take these reports with a grain of salt. But what is known for sure is that while they were seeing each other, Luke asked the girl to keep their relationship private until she had turned 18, so as to not turn any heads. And during this time, Luke never mentioned having STDs, and instead he promised the girl that he was clean, even lying to the point that he had showed her a copy of his medical history, which was likely either forged or completely out of date. Luke's actions were heinous, and his words were that of a man who knew he was doing wrong, yet actively trying to get away with it anyway. And if all these charges weren't horrible enough, the investigation into Luke revealed one final proverbial nail in his coffin, as the investigators had discovered undeniable proof that these alleged encounters had taken place. Proof that came in the form of video recordings that were all done without the victim's knowledge. Following the discovery, Luke was arrested and his TikTok page was removed once more. But despite the evidence for these charges lobbied against him, it appears that Luke isn't actually in prison, at least not yet, as after quickly making bail, some internet users claim that they've seen him around Bangkok, enjoying his life and acting as if nothing happened, even posting stories on what appears to be his secret private Instagram. I was unable to find any updates outside of this, making it unclear whether Luke is still on bail, if he's been taken back into custody, or if he ended up beating the charges. So for now, it's uncertain how Luke's story will end. But it's still disheartening to know that his presence is still looming out there in the shadowy corners of the online world. October 25th, 2022. The bell rings throughout the halls of the Jiuan Middle School in the Yangtze province of China, marking the start of another class period. Jiuyuan was not your standard middle school. For starters, it was massive, stretching roughly 600 acres around, and it featured dorm rooms where the students would stay full-time, sometimes even being accompanied by their parents. And on top of this, the huge complex was guarded and enclosed by a large wall topped with barbed wire. It was certainly a unique place, to say the least. But as the nearly 3,000 students across the campus piled into their different classrooms, one student failed to take his seat. 15-year-old Hu Xinyu. The teacher waited 5 minutes, then 10 minutes, growing more and more annoyed at the boy's tardiness. However, this annoyance would slowly turn to worry, as by the time the class period had ended, there was still no sign of the boy, prompting an immediate campus-wide search, yet he was nowhere to be found. And most chillingly, there was no record of him leaving out of the school's guarded exit. Confused, staff checked the campus security footage, where they would find Hu walking out of his dormitory, heading in the direction of his class, which was located in a building no more than a few hundred feet away. Yet, he never made it there. Instead, the campus cameras revealed a blind spot of only 10 meters between his dorm room and that class building. A blind spot that no student, and likely no faculty, aside from maybe a select few, could have known about. And yet, within that blind spot, Hu had vanished into thin air. In between these buildings was a path that led to a large park on the premises, in which many assumed Hu had probably slipped into. But when police checked the area with their tracking dogs, their search yielded nothing. So they took things a step further, this time doing a deeper search of the campus itself, even looking into septic tanks and water tanks, checking every square inch. But again, no trace of the boy was found. All they could uncover was his cell phone and other personal belongings that were left behind in his room, with the only object of his missing being a small recorder that he had purchased a few days before. It was believed that at the time of his disappearance, that recorder was literally the only item he had taken with him. Somehow, this young boy had disappeared within the tightly watched walls of his school, with there being no sign of him on campus and no evidence that he had ever left. Despite the fact that China, and this area in particular, is blanketed in cameras, seemingly watching every single inch, but Hu was nowhere. It was as if the school had swallowed him whole. Shortly after his disappearance, Hu's mother began desperately posting to Douyin under the account Xin Yu's Mother Searching for Son, where she begged the public for help in finding her missing child, with clips of these plaintive pleas sparking immense interest from a vast number of people across the web, leading to the case immediately exploding in popularity, popularity that only continued to grow as new disturbing information began to surface. It started with a revelation made by an internet user in China, who mentioned that Hu was not the first student to go missing from the school. In fact, these disappearances were becoming seemingly a yearly occurrence, prompting immediate speculation about the school and their potential involvement in these disappearances. With the school becoming more suspicious, as reports began emerging that once police had arrived, they realized that there was data missing from the CCTV cameras, with many of the cameras on the premises conveniently malfunctioning on that specific day that Hu had vanished, almost as if the footage had been deleted afterwards. But not before one of the guards had supposedly snuck a video, which he claimed exposed what really happened that fateful day. I'm not sure if I'll be able to show it here, but the grainy CCTV footage shows what looks to be a young boy, lying limp before being placed onto a stretcher and carried away, with many online taking the clip and running with it, claiming adamantly that it was Hu, and that he had clearly been kidnapped. And this wasn't the only supposed recording of the incident, with the other evidence coming from the recorder that Hu had been carrying. But although at this point the device was never recovered, one internet user claimed that it featured a cloud storage system, in which he was able to hack into and access Hu's final recording from that day, with this clip being even more disturbing. With all these claims and supposed evidence making their way across the internet, everything seemed to point to Hu's disappearance as being one massive conspiracy, one in which the school was not only working to cover up, but also seemed to actively play a role in. But why? What was so special about Hu that made him a target? Well, one account from a supposed student of the very same school stated that before the boy had vanished, the school held a mandatory health evaluation, where Hu's blood was drawn, revealing that his blood type was P. And if that doesn't sound like any sort of blood type you've heard before, it's because it's one of the rarest in the world. As in China, only about one dozen out of a million people have it. Because of this, it was claimed that Hu had been killed in order for his organs to be harvested and used as a transplant for a local official who shared the same rare blood type. The story was compelling, and with the school's suspicious history of disappearances, people in the area began to protest at its gate, demanding to know what was going on, to which the principal and the staff lashed out in anger, acting crazed as if they had something to hide. Which only added further fuel to the fire. And with all these disturbing accounts and details coming out from all across the web, the fire raged more and more intensely as the theories grew wilder and wilder. Until January 29th, 2023. When a man walking his dog stumbled across the body of Hu Xinyu, as it hung lifelessly in the woods, alongside a brick wall just barely 60 meters away from his school. Next to his body was the voice recorder that had multiple audio messages stating his intentions to end his own life, which was done using his own two shoelaces. In the time since his body was discovered, lots of new information has been brought forward by officials, who sternly stated that both the recording and the video of Hu had been completely faked, along with a variety of other details that the press had leaked, and that an autopsy revealed that he had no injuries other than those that were self-inflicted, and most importantly, that the body included all of its organs. It was also discovered that his journal revealed that he was more troubled than many had believed, and that he was going through a difficult time, with his grades suffering drastically, leading to these dark thoughts. The whole case was, honestly, a mess, and especially the coverage during the height of its popularity, as it's now clear that people were simply making up stories and even evidence, which the media ran with without question, leaving us in a strange place where it's impossible to tell which stories and which details were actually real. But to this day, the case still remains polarizing, with many continuing their suspicion of the school and their involvement. With the most common argument being that the school had been searched over and over and over again, and yet no one saw the body? Along with this, many have taken exception to the idea that Hu could have carried this all out with just his shoelaces, as he was there for over 3 months. Could they really have supported his entire body weight for that long without snapping? Well, some people actually tested out the strength of these shoelaces to see for themselves, leading to various degrees of success. Prompting the theory that Hu's body was somehow planted there afterwards, or that it wasn't even him. So despite this case technically being closed and the investigation now over, it's still very much alive here in the online world, where people continue to question, what exactly happened to Hu Xinyu?
Let's take a look at Dewey's Rules of Water Safety. Now, if you ever find yourself in trouble in the water, relax. If there's an emergency, go to the nearest telephone and dial 911. You got it? Good.
It was a freak occurrence. 47-year-old Deborah Stevens was making her way through her typical route delivering newspapers when suddenly the skies opened up, dropping down a historic flood on Fort Smith, Arkansas. But knowing she had a job to do, Deborah pushed on, dodging closed and flooded roads in an attempt to get to her usual paper route. A risky decision that proved costly, as upon attempting to take a new path behind a set of apartment buildings, Deborah's car would be swept up into the floodwaters, pinning her vehicle against a set of trees. And in a panic, she calls the police.
911, where's your emergency?
I have an emergency, a severe emergency. I'm in a flooding. My car veered off the road while I was doing my newspapers, and I'm flooded over here on the end of Kincaid, and it's all the way up to my windows, and I can't get out, and I'm scared to death, ma'am. Okay, can you please help me really bad?
I need you to calm down. I need you to tell me where you are.
Upon establishing contact with 911 operator Donna Renew, the two began their work trying to determine where exactly she had been trapped, as this area was completely unfamiliar to Deborah.
I don't know, ma'am. I'm on the end of Kincaid down here by these apartments. There's some apartments on Kincaid. I don't know what they're called.
What color is your vehicle?
Yeah, dark. It's gray SUV, lady. The mortar's all the way up to my windows.
Okay, hold on for me. Don't hang up. And you're at close to the area, 5801 Kincaid?
Yes, ma'am, I need help right now.
The urgency of the situation is clear just by hearing Deborah's voice, as she pleads with the operator to send someone out to her as soon as possible, recognizing that the water was likely going to consume her in the following minutes, leading to Deborah growing more and more panicked.
Please send somebody fast, I can't, man, I'm scared.
Okay, listen,
I can't swim, I'm gonna drown.
You're not gonna drown, just calm down.
Well, ma'am, it's all the way up to my chest.
Okay,
please,
listen,
hurry.
I understand. Hold on for a minute.
I'm scared. I'm sorry.
It's fine to be scared. You have a right to be scared.
I'm scared.
Though this is where this fairly normal 911 call begins to take a strange turn, as Deborah's urgency was not reciprocated by the operator, who began to not only dismiss Deborah's worries, but seemingly become annoyed at the trapped woman.
Somebody save me.
Am I not on the phone with you trying to get you some help?
Yes,
okay,
but somebody give me help before I die. I'm sorry.
You're not going to die. I don't know why you're freaking out. It's okay. I know the water level is
high.
I'm scared. I understand that, but you're freaking out doing nothing but losing your oxygen up in there, so just calm down.
But are they not going to come and get me?
You said what? I'm sorry.
When are they gonna be here?
As soon as they get there.
Man, my phone's gonna die and they're not gonna find me and it's gonna ruin my brand new phone.
Do you really care about your brand new phone? I mean, you're over there crying for your life. Who cares about your phone?
And this frustration only grew more and more visceral as she then began to place the blame onto Deborah for getting into this predicament in the first place.
Hold on, okay?
Thank you. I'm sorry if I'm rude, but I'm scared.
You're not being rude. I know you're scared. Just calm down for me.
I'm scared. I've never had anything like this happen to me before.
Well, this will teach you next time. Don't drive in the water.
Couldn't see it, ma'am. I'm sorry, or I wouldn't have.
I don't see how you didn't see it. You had to go right over it, so.
No, ma'am. I was in the drive. I was in the parking lot. There was no water where I was at.
Okay. The water just didn't appear.
At this point, the call had been going on for well over 15 minutes, but still, no help had become visible to Deborah, who, despite knowing just how close to death she was, remained as composed as she could be, just thankful to have someone there talking to her, even if that person on the other end of the line was dismissing her and demeaning her.
You, I'm sorry, ma'am. What's your name?
Donna.
Donna, thank you for being here for me, Ms. Donna.
You're welcome.
Though all of this failed to stop the obvious annoyance of the operator, who, after nearly 20 minutes now, couldn't help but sneak in a laugh.
In between both apartment complexes on this street, at the dead end.
In the very back side, there's a bunch of trees.
I don't know. Right there, she shows 5801 at the end.
Before finally just losing it.
These people are out, they can all see me. They're all standing out there watching.
Miss Debbie, you're going to have to shut up, okay? I need you to listen to me.
Yes, ma'am.
The whole call had been leading up to this moment, as Donna's frustration had finally boiled over, as she straight up tells the helpless woman to shut up. Though despite this demand, Deborah couldn't keep quiet for long, as the situation that was teetering on the edge of life and death suddenly collapsed.
It's helping me ping your location, so don't hang up on me. Okay, where are you moving to? Tell me where it's going. Okay, tell me where you are. Listen to me, hold on. I'm on the phone with her right now. She is legit freaking out. She said the vehicle is now moving in the water and she doesn't know which way it's going, so stand by.
I'm standing around the very back side of the apartment complex on the southeast side, and the only part of her car I can see is the roof and the dome light that's on in it. I can't get out there to her, and you're gonna have to wait out here to me to get to me, so.
It would take officers approximately 12 hours to find Deborah's car, where inside she was dead, her final moments of life being captured on a 911 call where the operator couldn't even pretend to care. And her predicament was made even more heartbreaking in hindsight, as it was revealed that Deborah was handicapped and couldn't even swim. In fact, she had a crippling fear of water. Following the release of this dispatch call to the public, heavy criticism was immediately placed onto Donna Renew, with hundreds and thousands of people signing petitions calling for criminal charges to be made against her. But no such charges were ever made. In fact, she wasn't even fired for her role, because this was her final shift anyway. She had submitted her 2 weeks notice exactly 2 weeks before, and this just so happened to be her final shift, which perhaps explains her attitude. And with one last cruel twist to the story, just 3 weeks after Deborah's passing, her mother Nancy would pass as well, with family members claiming that it was due to a broken heart and the stress caused by the ordeal. Though despite this and the fact that Donna Renew has never apologized for her actions, Deborah's family has gone on to forgive her nonetheless, with this amazing act of virtue shining a faint light on one of the darkest cases I've ever come across.